Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee, down there in Decatur, Georgia. My good friend and fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green, is here. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. It's good to be back this week. It was a more stressful Saturday than I was planning on having, but it's good to be back.
We will discuss why your Saturday night was quite stressful, because it is quite interesting, and there's a lot of different perspectives among both Georgia fans, national media folks, Kirby Smart, and a post-game Q&A with Cole Kublik after the game. I thought was interesting. A lot of different ways of couching what is going on with Georgia the last 2 weeks that I'm curious about, because one thing seems to be clear is no one is really 100% certain whether or not it matters or it does not matter. But we'll find out. But we'll get more into that momentarily, Matt Green. But how was your football watching weekend? Were you able to divvy up your Saturday the way you would have preferred? Did you catch everything you needed to catch on Saturday?
Oh yeah, without a doubt, man. It was a great weekend. I felt like just in the full slate of games we had, like Kentucky and Ole Miss gave us a good one at noon. Good 3:30 games, and then obviously a few night ones. But yeah, and then the Braves also taking two of the for the first two games of this series. Hopefully they can take the third against the Mets. So it's a packed sports weekend. It's been good so far. How about yourself? How's the bye week?
Same. It's nice, man. When you're on a bye week, like, yes, I miss having a rooting interest on a Saturday, but it was just nice. I was able to just kind of organize my Saturday and had a little window for date night with my wife, going to a new local spot for a couple hours to get away, and then I come back to craziness with Georgia and everything else. And it was great. The Braves winning and all that good stuff. Just being able to do what I want to do. And that was the other thing, is like the Braves having an important series the weekend that the balls were off was nice. So I didn't have my attention divided. So
very true.
It was good. I picked my spots. Remember, we discuss where we watch and what we choose to watch and what games I think are going to be good. Like, oh, I had a hunch that Alabama and Arkansas would not be worth your time, and it was not worth anyone's time, but we'll get into that.
Sir, it was most certainly worth your time. It's a fantastic game.
Speaking of, we'll get into our pick'em, because I think I'm going to feel pretty good about where we're at going into week six, but we shall see. Matt Green, there is some really, really big news that dropped today, recording this on a Sunday, late on a Sunday. Longtime head coach at Wisconsin, Paul Chryst, has been relieved of his duties. Jim Leonard will be taking over as the interim, the DC former player as well. for the remainder of the 2022 season, following Brett Bielema coming into Madison as the former Badgers head coach and pounding Wisconsin the way that Wisconsin has traditionally overpowered everybody, with Chase Brown just being maybe the best running back in college football this year, and really adopting the style. So I guess for Bielema and the Fighting Illini to rise, Wisconsin had to fall. And with that, Graham Mertz, who had another poor outing for the Badgers, they made a change at the top. This is wild because you don't really see this from the Badgers, who are a very successful, very conservative university when it comes to just the way they operate. And they're just quiet. They do their work. They go 10-2, 9-3 year over year and handle their business. And we just kind of take them for granted, where the defense has been elite for a really long time. And they don't go through coaches like this. They had the Barry Alvarezes of the world, but I mean, Bielema, I mean, they thought was going to be there for a long time, and he was there a healthy amount of time. Paul Chris has been there a healthy amount of time. You can tell from the AD statement that he did not want to make this move, and it really bothered him. And I think Chris McIntosh was a former Wisconsin player too, who is their AD. So they're very family focused, like Barry Alvarez, McIntosh, Chris. You go up and down the list, but they made a move where enough was enough, and the offense just can't. They did something that Iowa is far too intimidated to do at any point with the son of Kirk Ferentz in that Iowa offense, and just saying, hey, we got to make some changes here. This is ridiculous. But what do you make of the Badgers, Matt Green, moving on from Paul Chryst, who had a lot of success at Wisconsin over the years?
He did have a lot of success, but also not necessarily at the level of, like you said, with Alvarez and same with Bielema. It's like both like Alvarez retired, Bielema took what he thought was a better job. Like, but I mean, man, that he should have been the coach of Wisconsin for the last 15 years. Honestly, can we do that? Like, Bobby Petrino, blanking on his name for 2 seconds. Is this just a Bobby Petrino situation? Like, come on, you want to run this style? Wisconsin's got to, Brett Bielema, just bring him back. It was a mistake he made to go to Arkansas. I should have never left. Just, that's the guy you want. He fits Wisconsin football.
But I mean, now Bielema's at a good spot. Like, Illinois is cooking. Like, he's developing a culture, developing the program. And I'm not sure. I mean, it's not like Wisconsin's just raking in 5-star and 4-star talent. It's not. They're developing guys. And it's, I mean, I'm sure the money is a little bit more at Wisconsin than at Illinois. And obviously the fan base at Wisconsin is far more rabid and has much higher
expectations. The tradition Wisconsin has is nowhere close to Illinois.
But can you go, like, if Bielema keeps building this thing he wants to build and is able to develop these running backs in the way he did back in his Wisconsin days at Illinois, with way less expectations, where he's just kind of the big man on campus, where they're overachieving and they're just playing at a level that they have never played at year over year, where you've had the blips, the Ron Zook, Juice Williams blips years, and the Kirk Kittners, and going way back, the Brandon Lloyds. Like, they've had spotty times of success, but by and large, definitely a basketball school. I don't know. I don't think he would leave for that. I think he's building something cool, and I feel like your life just is far less stressful, because I'm not certain you can win a title at either school ever. And if you have less expectations at this other school, that's not, I mean, I don't want to offend Wisconsin fans on their university. It's just, I don't think they're as far apart as some people might say those two jobs are, outside of money and fan support.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. Like, Wisconsin doesn't seem like just one of these blue blood programs by any means, but they are. I mean, you go look at the last 20 years. I mean, they are definitely like one of the three best teams in the Big Ten. Like, they've been a very consistent program. So I don't know it's not like it's like a pressure cooker of a job. Like, you don't have to win natties or we're going to kick you out. It's like, we want you to be in the Big Ten championship probably every other year, right? And just, give us an opportunity to win a conference championship. I mean, Bielema won at least one or two conference championships, I believe. Alvarez, I'm sure, won several. But so Wisconsin, it doesn't seem like a program that has unrealistic expectations. It doesn't seem like a Nebraska necessarily. And they also haven't been nearly as bad as Nebraska. They have, like, while they might not get like five stars and things like that consistently, they do have like a brand of like an identity as a program, that they do get big time offensive linemen. Like, yeah, they might not be recruited five stars or whatever, but they put linemen in the NFL. They put running backs in the NFL. Like, they have an established identity. I mean, is it good enough? Is it better enough than Illinois to, like, you know, root up what you're doing and go take a program that's not where they want to be right now? You know, that remains to be seen. But I feel like the ceiling of Wisconsin, I think, is definitely higher than Illinois.
It's interesting because Jim Leonard now, I think, is going to get a real shot to prove he can just take over and just hire an outside OC that revamps this offense. I mean, his defenses have been top 10 year over year. Like, he has really, really developed and kept that thing humming on that side of the ball. And obviously a former player and well-liked, and that'd be a popular hire, I'm sure. And the next seven games, so they've played five games, right? The next seven are against unranked teams. So Wisconsin, I mean, yes, you fire the coach now to get ahead of things a little bit. I'm curious, though, too. You mentioned Nebraska. I wonder which job ends up getting more big-time appeal. I wonder which school gets bigger names and is seen as a bigger job over the next couple months, because I think that'll be pretty illuminating about where both both universities are going. I also will throw this out there. There might be a bidding war. Bruce Feldman threw this out here yesterday or this evening. Lance Leipold is from Wisconsin. Lance Leipold, obviously undefeated at KU. Didn't he coach at like one of those small Wisconsin schools?
Yeah, Wisconsin Whitewater.
Yeah. That makes a bunch of sense. That would be like the slam dunk type hire. He comes back to Wisconsin. You're going to pull him after 2 years at Kansas. I feel like that's going to be a bigger pull than Nebraska, no matter how much money Nebraska could potentially throw at Leipold. But it will be interesting to see if we get a bidding war situation. Who would have thought 2 years ago you would have told either of these fan bases that they would be in a bidding war to hire away the Kansas football coach? I mean, times change quickly, man.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you said the number one thing. It's about the money. There's this perception that Nebraska has a whole lot of money and they can, you know, they're going to throw something at the next coach. And so that's how they're going to land, you know, some name out there. But maybe Wisconsin, like, we might be underselling it, that, you know, there's this national perception that, oh, they're down, just like them in Iowa. Oh yeah, they're down just winning nine games every year and going to a New Year's Day bowl, like, you know, and then everything's fine. And so maybe Wisconsin is thinking, sitting here, like, we were playing in Rose Bowls with Brett Bielema, with Barry Alvarez. Like, we need to at least be playing in Rose Bowls again. And maybe they are a big time tradition. Like, I it's hard to know when you're ranking the programs, like, top 20 programs. There's like so many teams really that have maybe better resources, maybe better proximity to where more of the five-star talent is coming than Wisconsin. But if you're ranking programs just winning percentage success over the last 20 years or so, Wisconsin is right up there, top 10, top 15. Like, they've been a very consistent program. So this also doesn't seem like the huge rebuild that something like Nebraska would be.
I would agree. And then another Midwest school opened up today. Carl Durrell, who has started 0-5 at Colorado this year, he gets ousted today as well. The DC was ousted first, then he came out after. 8-15 overall, 6-9 in Pac-12 play as a whole. Man. This is, he's getting paid a lot of money. I think from Brett McMurphy, he said he will get an $8.7 million buyout by the Buffs to leave. I don't know. The Buffs is weird. Like, we grew up, Buffs were a great football team, obviously. I mean, go back to the Cordell years. Like, they have won at a big time level. They've shown they can do that. But you're in the Pac-12. That's a problem. You're not in one of the big conferences, the money conferences. The facilities are good. The recruiting, it is complicated. There's not a lot of big time talent in Colorado. Not a lot of 5-star or 4-star guys in that area. So they have to be a little bit diverse and go after the California kids, Texas kids, things like that. I don't know. Like, I think of the three in the Midwest, I think Colorado is a distant third in what that job looks like right now. Because if you're taking that job, you don't really know where Colorado is going to be. Are they going to be in the Mountain West in a couple of years? Are we sure they are in good? I don't know. Like, I think Colorado, that job will be fascinating. Because, like, Mike McIntyre had that thing humming a little bit a couple of years ago. Who's bounced around a lot as DC, but
I wouldn't say humming, but he did have the one good season.
Yeah, it was, hey, that's humming. You'll take that any day of the week. I don't know what Joel Klatt's got to do.
Been, yeah, without a doubt.
Joel Klatt's got to step in. I don't know what more we need to see here. Just hire Joel Klatt and see what happens.
No, Joel Klatt would figure out quickly how much better his current job is than the Colorado head football coach. Yeah, I think you said the number one thing. With ever since they joined the Pac-12, they've just become like an irrelevant program. Mm-hmm. So now there is no stability on like what conference they're even going to be in 5 years. Like if there's a candidate for one of the odd man out musical chairs, the person that's left out, like Colorado, I feel like is definitely up there. They're not in California with Cal and Stanford, with UCLA and USC. They left the Big 12, so I don't know. There could even be some animosity with the current Big 12 schools, and when it comes to Colorado, as far as bringing them back. So, yeah, they're in a very precarious situation. It just there's sometimes like yeah, like you said, in the 90s they were a relevant college football program. There's sometimes that it doesn't. That's just a chapter that's closed, and it's not, the door's not going to open back up. And I like Wisconsin, like we've said, with Wisconsin, Nebraska, you can at least see, you know, the forest through the trees, right? Like the fans care a lot. Colorado, I mean, that place is 50% full, maybe each game. Like it's not a big stadium. It doesn't have nearly the prestige of either of those other programs. I would worry about. I have no idea who's going to take this job. This doesn't seem like a very good one.
Quickly, I would like to get your perspective on this. So we have five Power Five firings to this point: Paul Chryst, Wisconsin; Scott Frost, Nebraska; Jeff Collins, Georgia Tech; Carl Durrell, Colorado; and Herm Edwards, Arizona State. A combined $60+ million in buyout money just from those five. Just dead money going
out.
Wow. Insane. If you had to rank those five jobs off the dome in terms of what is the best job possible for the best candidate, like if you're a top candidate, how do you look at those five jobs? How would you do it? 1 through 5.
So what was this again, Wisconsin, Nebraska,
Arizona State,
Georgia Tech,
and Colorado.
I think Colorado's got to be at the bottom, mm-hmm. and then Georgia Tech is a step up from that. Even though it's in the Southeast, I just feel like Georgia Tech just has so many challenges on what they could be. I think Arizona State, that's tough. I feel like a lot of people that kind of talk about Arizona State like they're kind of a sleeping giant down there in the Southwest, but I would probably put Arizona State third, Nebraska second, and Wisconsin first.
I would probably do, I agree with most of that. Colorado, I think, is a distant five. I'd probably go one. I think Wisconsin, you could even sell me as a distant one. I would say Wisconsin one. I'd probably flip Nebraska and Arizona State, though. I think not a sleeping giant. I think people overvalue it, but I do think just the recruiting base and where sports are going, and like, I think you're going to be able to get better coaches and players just want to play in that kind of climate. Like, they're just going to want to play in Tempe. I think there is an advantage there, and we saw it a little bit with Herm Edwards. They revitalized it a little bit. They've won consistently. I think the Arizona State job is not a sleeping giant, but I think I would probably bet on that one being more intriguing for the top candidate than Nebraska. But Nebraska probably right there at three. Tech, I agree, is a distant four, and then Colorado is a distant five. It's probably how I look at it.
And then what else is going to open up? Auburn?
Auburn. And then Auburn, I think, goes to one. Like, we make jokes about Auburn, but it's still, when that job opens, that's the best job in college football that's available, like, probably this cycle.
You can win like titles at Auburn. It's the worst job of all the best jobs in college football, though. So it's tough. I don't know that it's a better job than Wisconsin, because knowing we're going to an expanded playoff, like, who's getting in the playoff more times in the next 10 years? Wisconsin or Auburn? Like, I have confidence in the next 10 years there's going to be several times Wisconsin could be the second best team in the Big Ten, even the third best team in the Big Ten, and can potentially get into the playoff, like, as the 11th ranked team. Auburn, there's a lot of programs in the SEC, especially Oklahoma and Texas coming over now. Like, their schedule isn't getting easier. I think the path to the playoff, like, they do have more talent, and they consistently get more talent than any of those programs, but the path to the playoff is just so difficult at Auburn.
Maybe. But we say that, like, when they're down, and then they get the Cam Newton, or they get the Nick Marshall and company, and then they're just the best team in college football for 1 year, and it all falls apart. I would still rank Auburn as a significantly better job, because Auburn can also just stumble into a top 15 blue chip ratio program. Like, it is just, I think it's almost impossible for the money, for the boosters, for the fan support, for the fertile recruiting ground, for Auburn not to just always be a premier top 10, top 15 at absolute worst job in this sport.
Yeah, Wisconsin, Nebraska don't have to play Georgia and Alabama every year.
But I mean,
that's the thing.
But if you look at the future of the Big Ten, I mean, they benefited from the Big Ten West existing. Wisconsin benefited majorly from that being a thing. And now mushing them together, I don't know. We're going to see how much of a gap there really is between the Michigans and the Ohio States and the rest of the – and I mean, USC
and
coming
Penn
in.
Penn State. I think and Penn State too. Wisconsin, like, I'm sure Penn State has a complex, an inferiority Big Ten East complex that they feel like they could probably be the best team in the Big Ten West most years. But it is kind of how – they definitely have benefited from the weaker division, Wisconsin has.
Last thing before we get into our recap, Matt Green, we had, the new AP poll come out, sir. What jumped out to you about the changes? Because some Georgia fans were a little feisty about dropping one spot. Do you agree with the new rankings?
One, I will say I agree with the rankings. But second, I will say, and speaking for the angsty Georgia fans out there, I firmly believe if you switched the jerseys that Georgia and Alabama had, and Alabama was number one doing what Georgia's done the last couple weeks, I think Alabama would still be number one. Honestly, I think there's a bias with Alabama, but just looking at these two teams so far, I mean, I think Georgia, the South Carolina and Oregon wins, while they're impressive, you know, we still don't necessarily know how good South Carolina is. So I think I'd have to say just because of the way they dismantled Oregon, that still feels like the most impressive win between these two teams. But Alabama's got at Arkansas and at Texas, even though they didn't look good versus Texas. I think those wins, that trumps Georgia's resume to this point. So, I mean, especially with the way they messed around with Missouri this past week, I think I don't really have a problem with saying Alabama's number one.
This was a pretty wild stat from Ben Stevens. He said, quote, on Twitter, "It's been 26 years since Kansas and Syracuse were ranked in the same AP poll. And they are both ranked in this new one." Pretty wild. I don't know who had before the year that Kansas and Syracuse would both find their way in there, but
I wish I had the stat right in front of me. But you saw how many ranked teams lost this weekend, right? Like, it was like
a lot.
7, 10, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 8, like every single team just about in the teens lost. Like, there's, what is it, 7 new teams that weren't ranked last week that are now ranked this week. Like, I've never seen that sort of change in just 1 week of the polls.
Because it was TCU, UCLA, Kansas, LSU, Cincy, Miss State, Syracuse. Is that 7? That's 7, right?
Yeah, I think you counted all the 7. Baylor, A&M, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Minnesota, Florida State, Pittsburgh. All of those dropped out of the top 25.
I will say UT staying at 8 and Oklahoma State hopping them to 7. I mean, it's just nitpicking. I mean, I didn't really like that. I think Tennessee should have just moved up to 7 and where UK was, and Oklahoma State should have been at 8. Because I think you could also make the case that Ole Miss is probably better than Oklahoma State. But
does the Pittsburgh loss to Georgia Tech, is that what kept Tennessee down? Now Pittsburgh doesn't look quite as good of a team.
Well, we'll get to that.
Oklahoma State beating Baylor, I mean, that's a big time win. So I don't have much problem with that. It's also going to be decided. Nice to see LSU sneak into the top 25. So we can get Tennessee at LSU. It'll be a nice ranked matchup. But yeah, it's a lot of change this week. It's really interesting. Ole Miss, yeah, we'll get to it, but it was an exciting week.
The only thing, and we'll move to our pick 'em now recap show, is I would probably, like you mentioned, like the top half, I would probably put Ohio State at 1 at this point. I think Ohio State showed the most, like especially even without Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and just putting on an absolute clinic. They just blow the doors off Rutgers this weekend at home, and people can yada yada it, but by and large, they're the only ones with no real stink bombs to this point in the top three. Like Alabama and Georgia both struggle a little bit, and I'm sure SEC fans will throw, oh, who's Ohio State playing, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, I mean, Georgia struggled with a bad Kent State team and relative to the talent, relative to who they're up against. And Bama struggling to close out Arkansas in the second half, and Bama looking beatable against Texas. Like, I think the only clean of those three who we've, before the year, identified as the three head and shoulders best rosters and best chance to win the college football playoff, I would probably put, right now, I would go 1 Ohio State, 2 Georgia, 3 Alabama. It's probably how I would have done it to this point.
Yeah, and I couldn't necessarily disagree with that. And I think a lot of people had Georgia at 3 because Georgia had more first place votes than Alabama in the AP, but Alabama still jumped them for 1. So I think that's probably the case, is that Ohio State was getting a lot of those, or Alabama's getting at lowest number 2 votes. So yeah, I think it'll all work itself out. So it's nice to see TCU jumping in there, seeing Kansas, some new faces, but yeah, it'll all work itself out. Everyone gets excited at 4-0, 5-0, but we'll see what happens.
Well, Matt Green, it's my favorite time of these weekly shows this season where I think I can just do my happy dance around the podcast studio here in Knoxville, Tennessee. If my math is correct, the lead has widened for Team Chase over Team Matt this college football season. Am I correct here?
You would be correct about that, sir. It was, like we said, a lot of disagreements on the pod this past week, so it was going to be a real crossroads week for us. So to recap, you went 7-4 overall this week to my 4-7. Not great. Then you went 6-5 against the spread, and I did even worse, 3-8 against the spread. So on the season, you are now at 500 against the spread, 28-28-2, 41-17 overall. Really killing it so far this year. I do still have a winning record overall, 34-24, but against the spread, just 25-31-2. So what is that? You have a 3-game lead against the spread and a 7-game lead overall through 5 weeks of the season. Zeus is home dog of the week. The Arkansas Razorbacks, they let him down. They made things interesting, but they let him down. He did also pick TCU as a home dog, but that was not his official home dog of the week, so we can't count it. So, yeah, Arkansas let us down. It was an interesting one for 3 quarters until Alabama really put it on him.
Zeus needs to just stick with his gut. Like, he needs to stick. He was all in on Max Duggan. He thought it was Max Doggo. He was a little confused and thought he was pro dog, and they had a dog in the backfield for the Horned Frogs. And you should have rode that ride, because now I believe that puts Zeus back under 500 on the season.
That is true. 2-3 on the season.
Rough sledding. Matt Green.
No pun intended.
Exactly. First up, It's not on our roster. Is I wanted to, this game we didn't think would be worthy of a pick'em slate, making the pick'em slate. The Dogs, 17-0 down against the Missouri Tigers. They have to battle back. Twitter is in shambles, waiting. There is now, we can confirm though, there is a subset of folks, not even, it's mostly not Georgia fans from what I could tell, who are ready to stomp all over Stetson Bennett. Like any kind of issue with Stetson, they are waiting in the wings where it's like, oh,
is when, that right?
Yes.
If I you didn't hear up any Stetson talk, really. I mean, he wasn't great, but I didn't think the quarterback was at all the problem in the first half of this game.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, you just type in Stetson Bennett on Twitter Saturday night and seeing what the top Stetson Bennett comments were, and people were losing it on Stetson Bennett. And one comment was something like, if Stetson, this is what happens when the tight ends are finally covered for Georgia and they have to utilize their wide receivers, or Stetson has to do something else other than Brock Bowers or Washington and stuff like that. But as someone who watched the entirety of this football game, and that Georgia has now gone back-to-back weeks of hanging around and just kind of slogging through to inferior teams. And look, Kirby set up the game. Every SEC game is hard. This is not true when you're Georgia or Alabama. This is Nick Saban is not sweating Vanderbilt week over week. He is not sweating a lot of his competition. It's silly. You can't say that out loud. I get it. But when you're Georgia, and especially what Georgia is, where they could literally go three straight years without losing a regular season game, I get what he's saying to keep his guys upbeat and like understand you have to play week over week. But like I said, as someone who has watched these last 2 weeks, and especially this week on the road at Mizzou, what are you thinking in terms of where Georgia is at as a football team at this point in the year? And do you think there's actually troubling signs that Georgia fans should be wary of?
I think the biggest thing to be worried about for Georgia is their red zone offense. I think that's really, because I don't really include last week. Like, yeah, they only beat Kent State by 17, but that game was like never in question. Like, it was never less than a 2-score lead in the second half. Like, you expect Georgia to beat that team by at least 4 touchdowns. So, you know, but they had some turnovers in the red zone, that sort of thing, gave the team short field position. So I don't necessarily include last week. It wasn't a good performance, but this was a game that was actually in question the entire way. Like, I mean, you got into the fourth quarter and you're like, is Georgia really going to lose this game? It had the feelings of South Carolina 2019. Like, we're really just going to mess around, just not score any touchdowns. Not like, is that what we're going to do? Other than the fact that the South Carolina game, I think they had more turnovers. I think there was 3 or 4 turnovers in that game. So I think Georgia outgained South Carolina by like 300 yards or something that game, but just kept turning it over. In this one, Georgia actually didn't punt after the first quarter in this game. They scored on 6 straight drives until the very last drive of the game where they just ran the clock out. All 6 of those drives, they got into the red zone. 4 of them, the first 4, all ended in field goals. And the last 2, Georgia finally punched them into the end zone. But like that's four times driving all the way down the field and getting 12 points out of it. So I feel like that's where Georgia should be the most concerned, is the red zone offense. I feel like this defense now in week 5 is looking how, honestly, we kind of expected them to look in 2022. Like, I think they're a very good defense, but they're not a game changing defense. Like the 2021, it was going to be very difficult to repeat how good that team was, losing 6 first round picks on one side of the ball. Like, it's just, it's absurd. So I think now it's looking more like we kind of expected them to look like, okay, maybe they're not just as good as they were last year, but I still expect them to be very good. The turnovers, this is another one, like 2 turnovers, like one of them was forced. Guy ripped the ball out of Kendall Milton's hand, but one of them was just a completely unforced error on the handoff. I don't know if it was Stetson's fault or the running back's fault, but you just leave the ball there and, you know, you just can't do stuff like that and just beat yourself. So I think it's definitely the way this offense looked for, for half the game. It was just, they were moving the ball, but yeah, it was just, I would blame more than Stetson. I would blame the offensive line in the first half of this game. I think, oh, almost knocked my helmet off. Real microcosm of what's going on here with the Georgia Bulldogs.
I was
going
to say, that is the most Georgia thing. Like, the Georgia stuff just keeps happening this weekend.
So in the first half, Georgia had, where am I at? Seven drives in the first half and 172 yards, like, total. Like, just did very little. They couldn't run the ball hardly at all. 11 for 32 on the ground. And in the second half, you actually saw them breaking at runs. Dejon Edwards looked better. Kendall Milton, like, at the end of the game, I think all the running back stats look solid, but I don't really think it's indicative of how much Georgia really struggled to run the ball for two quarters. So, yeah, I think it's definitely something to worry about. I think it's good that, you know, these first couple SEC games you got out at South Carolina and at Missouri, I think it, you know, this shouldn't be some of the tougher games on your schedule as far as the SEC play goes, but yeah, you got Auburn coming in next week. I think there's definitely reason to be a little worried about where this team's at right now.
What do you think they clean up first? Do you think it's the running game, the offensive line, the red zone stuff? Which do you think actually lingers of the things that you just outlined that concerns you? What do you think lingers the rest of the year?
It's hard to say because I feel like this offensive line should be very good. So it seems like it's the University of Georgia, right? They should eventually figure out how to run the ball. Like, that's what they do so well. So you tend to not worry too much about the running game, even though, you know, through five games, it has not been, you know, what Georgia fans are used to. I think the red zone offense, I think is my biggest concern, because I think that's where people have kind of the most criticisms of Stetson, is when he's playing kind of that short field, that kind of 7-on-7 game. Can he beat teams in that way? Because if they're not able to run the ball, they're going to have to pass in the red zone. So I think, you know, hopefully they see an improvement versus Auburn next week, or that could be a real point of concern.
Interesting. Matt Green, we get into our pick'em preview, or pick'em recap, excuse me, pick'em preview in a couple days. We'll start with Clemson and NC State. I had the Tigers, who still maintain the longest home win streak, I believe, in college football, FBS, as a whole. It was rocking.
37 games, I think, now.
Something wild like that. Dabo was happy. There is something, just something I pointed out this evening, was just when I was I saw it back, was the entrance. The Clemson entrance really is maybe the coolest entrance of any college football program. I think I might be on that at that point where I think I would acknowledge the Clemson intro and walk down and touch the rock and everything is the coolest.
I have a grinds my gears about this, though.
Okay, I'm ready.
It's an iconic entrance, right? It's very cool. My beef is, it's a chicken or the egg type thing. ABC, ESPN isn't showing the entire entrance for every team. So it kind of becomes like a self-fulfilling thing. Like, this is a really cool entrance, so we put it on TV. Like, there's other teams that are also doing really cool entrances, but they don't show everyone's interest for like four straight minutes like they do. Like, they show them loading the bus, driving around the stadium past everybody, then coming out, touching the rock, and running down the hill, everything. I wish we would get that production for like every team's entrance. And then it's like we could kind of all decide, like we see the Virginia Tech one sometimes, because like we all know about the Inner Sandman and that one's really cool. But everybody, it's a big deal for everybody to run out onto the field. Like, everyone makes a big presentation of it, you know. Like, I've seen University of Florida, it's like whole montage on the screen, like, welcome to the swamp, only the Gators get out alive, that sort of thing. It's like everyone's doing cool stuff. I wish these broadcasts would show every team and not just like the three or four, the handful that we kind of all know about.
That's fair. However, it's still cool.
It's cool, for sure.
There's just no, we can nitpick it, but I think it's undoubtedly a cool thing. NC State misses another big opportunity to really cement themselves as a key player. And this was something I was concerned about where, man, if the scheduling, sometimes there's just so much luck involved in scheduling and you don't know how teams are going to be year over year, but you're like, if you can get it back, you're like, man, this NC State team's better than they were last year. And they were a good team, but you're like, I wish we could have flipped it. I would have given the Clemson loss back if you're a Wolfpack fan last year, the victory rather, and gotten Clemson at home this year. I think that would have been extremely important for this team because I think they're still a top 15-ish program. And I think you give them this win, you look at the rest of the schedule. I mean, this could have been a really, really special year for the Wolfpack, but they still had to go where teams just cannot win. Teams cannot win. And I will say one caveat here. The neutral site game against Georgia definitely played a role here because I think even if you play that at Clemson, do you think Georgia doesn't win that game last year against Clemson in Death Valley? I don't know. We'll never know.
What do you mean?
Well, it was in a neutral site. It was in Charlotte. So part of that home win streak is like when you play the best competition you've played on in a neutral site in the regular season, like it, that's a nice thing.
Yeah, and they can still hope for some sort of maybe three-way tie and try to get in it, but most likely you need Clemson to lose two games now, and that's probably not going to happen.
No. KJ Henry said Clemson would not have any red solo cups or cigars after the win. He said, quote, and I think I got this from ESPN, where he said, quote, there won't be any smoking cigars or drinking out of red solo cups tonight. It's just water bottles and getting ready for the next one. That is all we are worried about. So their heads, and also the other impressive thing, BC, I always forget how to pronounce his name.
Brissy,
yeah, he was out for this game. So doing that without arguably their best player was pretty big. But also, DJ Uiagalelei has really been fine. And he has 15 big-time throws per PFF through 5 weeks, which is impressive. I was going through his just passing stats and things of that nature on PFF. And, I mean, he ran the ball extremely well in this game, too. But 65% completion percentage, 1,200 yards, 7.8 yards per attempt, 11 TDs, one pick. I mean, he's been good enough. Like, DJ has been good enough, and he's, I think, going to be the guy the rest of the way. I think this was a big game for him, and he really needed to show out. And I think DJ passed a lot of tests on Saturday. What did you make of this game?
Yeah, that was my biggest takeaway, that I think this is the guy that we – you know, he's still not the Heisman caliber player that maybe we thought he was, but we're at least expecting this type of player. Like, every quarterback Clemson has had is given this element of running in their game. It's been part of the offense. So I feel like now that you've seen him a few weeks in a row actually be a part of their running attack, the offense is just so much more dangerous. He looks more comfortable as a passer now that he's able to do something on the ground. Like, it just... it feels like maybe if you're not, you know, throwing for touchdowns, you're still having an impact on the game. Like, I think I was very impressed with Uiagalelei in this game. I feel like NC State's defense, like, this was the difference between NC State and Wake Forest, that they were able to get stops. But, you know, as good as Devin Leary is, the running game could not do anything. And, you know, Leary, I feel like, was just under pressure this entire game. They're just, you know, there wasn't really much NC State could really do offensively. So it was, the defense was good enough to keep him in the game. I felt like it was going to take like 30, I think 31-28 was the score I kind of had in my head for this game. It was going to take about 30 points to win this game. And obviously Clemson scored exactly 30 points, but it was a big time win for Clemson for sure. And I guess that speaks to whoever KJ Henry's quote of like, this would have been a monumental win for NC State, for Clemson. This is just another W and on our way to hopefully getting back to the playoff.
Yeah, the path is quite is opening up quite a bit. The ACC it's mostly, if you look at the disparity between the two divisions that we are very familiar of, the two divisions in the Atlantic Coast Conference, that
of course
looks like it's going to be a pretty easy rest of the way.
I mean, the Atlantic right now, like, it looks like maybe the five best teams in the whole conference are all in the Atlantic. So there is some hope for NC State that, you know, maybe Florida State could, but obviously Clemson's already beaten NC State and Wake Forest now. But I don't think any of us are thinking Syracuse is going to come in there and knock off Clemson. But, you know, there's some hope that, yeah, maybe someone in the ACC can shake things up. But it's starting to look like Clemson. I thought this was the toughest game on their schedule. So they do go at Notre Dame and at Florida State. But I feel like NC State was the best team on the schedule. So Clemson's chances of going undefeated, I think, went way up after this weekend.
Washington goes down, the undefeated Washington Huskies go down to the still undefeated UCLA Bruins, who moved to 5-0 on the season. Matt Green, you talked yourself out of one of your standbys. Every week, you love the Friday night, just what that does, and you love a home dog on a Friday night game. It's your upset special, and yet here I was on an island on Friday night, watched this whole game, expecting a UCLA Bruin upset. UCLA does the job. DTR pulls a Michael Vick in this game, where the two, did you see this? The two University of Washington Huskies collide into each other as he scored a touchdown. He pulled that one. DTR was excellent. Michael Penix was also excellent in this one. Andre Ware kept citing that Michael Penix was his Heisman if he was voting today. And it's like, I mean, all right. I mean, we like Michael Penix, but like Washington's not. No, that's not happening. All right. But this was a fun one, and the Huskies do it in a fun way, or the Bruins rather do it in a fun way, where Bobo is this transfer, this slot guy transfer from Duke, who led the ACC in receptions last year, and he is a madman. He is so good in this Chip Kelly offense, filling the Riley Cooper role from Philadelphia back in the day, and like Jordan Matthews a little bit too, but you know, he was really good, and I was really impressed by what he was able to do against this Husky defense, which is still a very good defense. But something that I thought was interesting is the Bruins defense looks much improved. I like where they're at compared to last year, and Washington's just a little too one-dimensional for me, where 2.8 yards per carry. They had a touchdown drive, or basically went a whole drive. I don't remember if it ended in a touchdown or a field goal in the first quarter, where they didn't run the ball once, and they found some success there. But I don't know. I think they're just a little too one-dimensional, the 2.8 yards per carry, and Michael Penix has to do a lot. I'm nervous about him just staying healthy playing this way for the full season. But UW's a good team, top 25 team, just UCLA at home on a Friday night. It's spoopy season. You know this, Matt Green, and you still went away.
The weekday road game. I'm ashamed of myself. It's a hard win to get. And also, I mean, UCLA, or I should say Washington, lost by 8. This game was not nearly that close. Like, they obviously did. They did make it close, technically, late in this game. But right at the end of the third, UCLA up 40-16. Like, this offense was just firing on all cylinders. Zach Charbonnet, is he the most underrated running back in college football? Like, this guy had 1,100 yards, 13 touchdowns last year. He's already off to a big time start in 2022. He gives this offense just that element of the run game. Like, if DTR is playing this way and Zach Charbonnet is running like this, this is one of the best teams in the Pac-12. So I think we talked about, I said on our last show, like, UCLA was kind of like the Ole Miss of the Pac-12 to me. I didn't know. They were 4-0 versus a bunch of garbage teams. They have looked good, but it was hard to know really how much to value that 4-0 start. But I would say what they did for the first three quarters to Washington absolutely blew the brakes off of them. So, yeah, I was pretty impressed with what I saw from UCLA this weekend.
Next up, TCU. You were right on the money with this one. I stuck around with Oklahoma a little too long here. It looks like the Sooners get blown out again, this time on the road in Horned Frog country. Max Duggan just puts on a clinic in this one. Ted Roof. I mean, we should also mention there was an extremely dirty hit in this one that knocked Dylan Gabriel out of the game. A linebacker comes flying in super late, saw Gabriel slid and just could have written, obviously not Gabriel, out of the game, and he got a targeting call for that one and was tossed, and rightfully so. It was rough for Gabriel and company. But OU, they have a Ted Roof problem. Matt Green, Brent Venables brings in Ted Roof, and Ty Hildenbrandt, the solid verbal, has been on this for a while, dating back to when Ted Roof was the DC for Notre Dame years ago. But wherever he goes, Georgia Tech, you go up and down the list of Ted Roof stops. It's just a leaky defense. It doesn't go well. You don't want him in the room a little bit. It's basically where we're at. And no offense to Ted Roof personally. It's just the defenses are not good. And we should have seen this coming a little bit with Ted Roof being brought in. So I wonder if his days are numbered in Oklahoma country. But Max Duggan deserves all the praise here. He was the story. 302 passing yards, 3 TDs, 116 rushing yards, 2 TDs. Now, out of all FBS, 131 programs, Max Duggan is first in passer rating and first in yards per attempt. And the guy wasn't even supposed to start this year and was backing up Chandler Morris. And Morris gets hurt, and the rest is history. What did you make of the Horned Frogs pulling the upset over the Oklahoma Sooners, Matt Green?
Yes, sir. History repeated itself back in 2020 when Oklahoma opened the season to losing to Kansas State in Big 12 play, and they dropped to 0-2 on their way to the Red River Shootout. So yeah, I feel like TCU, they just did everything they wanted to offensively. Like almost 700 yards of offense in this game, 360 on the ground. Like they were just absolutely torching this Oklahoma defense. Max Duggan, that was my helmet sticker for the week. You mentioned everything he did. 300 yards through the air, over 100 on the ground, 5 total touchdowns. Like, what was this, 41-17 at the half? 27 in the first quarter? Like, they could not be stopped. Like, and Venables, like, I saw a funny meme, like, on Saturday, someone saying, I guess Oklahoma should have gone the defensive coach route after Venables got absolutely – this Oklahoma defense got absolutely torched. So, yeah, it's I think Will Venables – Will Venables. Brent
son?
Venables. I think that's a – who is it? That's a Padres player, Will Venable.
He's an outfielder. I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah. Brent Venables. I think he had the most unfortunate position of every year one head coach because like Dan Lanning, like he walked into a pretty good situation in Oregon, like where their coach left. It's a rebuild where the guy got fired. Like we know about obviously Miami and Cristobal. There's new coaches all over the country, but none of the other coaches did the head coach take like 20 of the best players on the team and also the best recruits that were committed. Like so he has this perception of like Oklahoma isn't a rebuild. We're competing for the Big 12 every year. You can just come in and just keep things going. But this actually was more of a rebuild than I think many of us gave it credit for in the off season. So yeah, for them to start 0-2 and now have the Red River Shootout, potential to start 0-3 in conference. That's not how you want to start things off as the Oklahoma head coach.
Where would you put them right now? I would even have them behind Texas, and I think the Vegas odds do too. I mean, I think Texas is favored out of the gate for the Red River Shootout going into this
week. Well, they talked about Ewers being back this past week, but
well, he's definitely coming back for Oklahoma, it looks like.
I think he is. So I think that really changes things. I think the ceiling of this Texas team seems a lot different with Ewers in. So, I mean, early, I don't know what the line is, but I'm definitely feeling Texas so far.
Well, my thing is, if you had to do one through whatever, I mean, right now, the teams that I think are better, and who would have had this before the season? The teams that I think right now are better than Oklahoma in the conference: Texas, Kansas State, TCU, Oklahoma State, Kansas, and Baylor.
I don't know if I would say Kansas definitively right now, but I would agree with you on all those others.
Who had that before the year? Pretty wild. Pretty
yeah. That
pretty
what, that was that five teams you named
yeah.
six teams.
I think it was
yeah,
five.
That's wild, and it's early. They still everybody plays everybody in the Big 12. So that's where they are right now after two games. It could get worse.
Speaking of things getting worse, the UK day for the Wildcats on the road in Oxford, where the Ole Miss Rebels stayed undefeated. The two programs were 15-3 in their last 18 games. Something had to give. The Wildcats, two turnovers in the red zone late in this one, multiple opportunities. Will Levis just not putting on the show that everyone, it's just everyone's waiting for the theoretical Will Levis is the number one overall pick game. And it's just for me, I don't think it's ever coming. I'm not a Will Levis guy. I'm not a Spencer Rattler guy. I'm more of a Hendon Hooker, Stetson Bennett kind of guy on this podcast. I like results and not the theoretical version of what a quarterback can be. You see the physical stuff, but he struggled, man. And he had a really bad fumble. Like you said, we were texting back and forth where, I mean, you have the touchdown fade and he just did not wait for his guys to get set. And that cost him the game, really, because the next play obviously fumbles, but that still falls on Will Levis. Like, that is Will Levis's job. And I think Mark Stoops was in his face about it, where it's like, you cannot do little things like that. And there's just something not all the way there that just, I'm not a Will Levis believer. There's just something missing. And I think Ole Miss deserves a lot of credit. They got after the quarterback, really only sending 3 and 4 guys. They had 8 deep a lot of this game. They were making Will Levis pick them apart. Chris Rodriguez was back for this one, so that really helped. But the offensive line being really bad, I think, is a problem for the Wildcats, which is something to monitor throughout the rest of this year, is that I don't see the path to that getting better based on their roster. So if Kentucky can't block, like, good luck against Georgia and Tennessee in the coming weeks. But I don't know. I think Ole Miss impressed me. Jackson Dart still shaky. I'm not a big Jackson Dart guy either after this week, but Ole Miss can run the football. And they were running right at Mark Stoops, like right in the middle. Like I think his name's Judkins, the backup for Zachary Evans, who really outperformed Evans in this one. But it's a good two-headed monster, and he was bursting through the middle of this vaunted Kentucky defense. And I don't know, I think Ole Miss deserves a lot of credit for winning this game, and Lane Kiffin just doing an insane job with Ole Miss. What did you make of this game?
I think if I was a Kentucky fan, well, let me start off this. I think we need a new segment on the pod here. I can like throw a flag, like a uni watch flag or something. One of the worst uniform games I've ever seen in my time. We had Kentucky wearing white, and Ole Miss wearing white, powder blue and white. What is this? This should have been a game where Ole Miss is rocking the red jersey. All Kentucky has is blue and white. So half the SEC West is burgundy. You can wear the powder blues against them. Like, so that's all. That's the first thing I'll say. Terrible uniform. Terrible time. I didn't mind the Ole Miss powder blues. I thought they were straight, but terrible time to bust them out against Kentucky rocking all white. So that's the first thing I'll say about this. If I was a Kentucky fan, I would feel like we blew this game. Like, from the, was it 2 extra points? A missed field goal, 2 extra points that they one was blocked, one was they fumbled the snap. Just left essentially like 4 points just on the board. And I think on top of just at the very end of the game, turning the ball over the way they did. I thought Chris Rodriguez made a huge difference for this Kentucky offense, and that is telling you how terrible this rushing game has been for them. Like, Kentucky is just built on defense and running the football, and you could see, like, I don't have the yards after contact in front of me. Chris Rodriguez was 19 for 72. I bet you he had 80 yards after contact. Like, he was working for everything he did. I feel like his individual just performance allowed Kentucky to have something in the running game. But you're right, this offensive line was getting absolutely blown up. They were ended up 37 carries for 108 yards, 2.9 yards a carry. Like, for what their identity is, that's not going to work. And it was big to get Rodriguez back, but even so, like, they still have a lot of work to do. But I feel like with the opportunities that you left just in the kicking game, I would feel like a Kentucky fan, like we blew this game.
Brown's a really good player, though. He's not Wandale Robinson, but he should have had a kick return touchdown in this one.
Yes.
He tripped over his own guy. Like, he's a star.
I felt like he was going to take every kick he had back to the house, honestly.
Why are you still kicking at him? Like,
seriously.
He's a player.
Two catches for 81 as well. Like,
Both screens, by the way.
He was a big play waiting to happen.
It's like one of those things with Kyle Pitts where you're like, when they had like with Florida and Damon, and it was just wheel route, Kyle Pitts, wheel route. And you get bored, but no one could stop it. So you're just going to call another Kyle Pitts wheel route. I don't understand why Brown doesn't get 10 screen passes a game. Like, I don't know why they're not doing that more often, because I just, the dude's a player, and he is really, really hard to bring down. Next up, Matt Green, we had Purdue upsetting Minnesota on the road. Tanner Morgan has his first bad game of the season. No Mo Ibrahim in this one, nursing an ankle injury. Three picks for Morgan, who was the most efficient quarterback through 4 weeks of the college football season. Just 47 yards, 26 attempts. That was the story. No Mo to balance out this Gopher offense. They just put too much on Tanner Morgan's plate, kind of like what happened last year, I think, a little bit. So we saw the Minnesota from a season ago pop up and the Tanner Morgan from a season ago. And Purdue, Aiden O'Connell played in this one, and Purdue gets a huge win. They love not living up to expectations when people are like, oh, could Purdue start off 6-0? Could they be the sleepy dark horse? They're never going to be that. But they're always just going to beat a ranked good Big Ten team, at least one of them, maybe two, every single year when they go 8-4 or 9-3, whatever it is. Jeff Brohm still is going to go to Iowa. He's going to go to Ohio State. He's going to go somewhere, and he's just going to upend these seasons. So that's what he does.
Let's be fair. Right now they've lost by four to Penn State, mm-hmm. and they've lost by three at Syracuse. That's not looking like a bad loss right now. I think this could be the best team in the Big Ten West. We talked about them, you know, coming into the year. I think Minnesota was especially it was at Minnesota, right? Uh-huh. Minnesota was at home, I believe, correct?
It was homecoming for them.
Yeah, so this definitely seemed like a loss that we were counting on their schedule. But, this is a big-time win. And we talked about their schedule. Like, from this point on, like, Nebraska's fired their coach. Wisconsin's fired their coach. The only other team they play from the East is Indiana the rest of the way. Like, this team, they could run the table the rest of the way. And like, but it is Purdue, so like you're saying, they probably will drop one at some point. But yeah, I thought this was this is not what I was expecting from Minnesota. Also in this game, I have another petition here. Can we add wide receivers, an interception column for wide receivers? Like, did you see the one in this game? Tanner Morgan just, I don't know, they're at like the 15-yard line, just wide open in the middle of the end zone, hits a guy right in his hands, bounces off his hands, Purdue picks it in the end zone. Just an absolute 14-point swing right there for Minnesota. But it's like the quarterback didn't throw an interception, right? Like, the receiver had an interception on this play. That's the other that's my other rant for the day. But I thought I was surprised by this. I've been impressed by Minnesota early on, and got to give it up to Purdue for holding them to just 10 points on this one.
You know who Ohio State does not want at all in the Big Ten title game? It's a Purdue coming out of the Big Ten West. They want no part of they can handle Minnesota, Iowa, whoever, Wisconsin. If they had to pick and choose, I think Purdue would be the last pick for who they'd actually want to see in a Big Ten title game.
They are a more dangerous offense than those than those teams, but I don't think Ohio State's worried about any. I think they're worried about the Big Ten East way more than they are anyone who's coming out of the West.
That's fair. K-State, your Kansas State Wildcats. I departed from the Kansas State hype train. I have to be consistent. I have to stick to the decisions that I made. Matt Green, as a married man, I have to be faithful to not only my wife, but also my college football opinions. And when I left the Kansas State Wildcat bandwagon, that was it. And unfortunately, well, honestly, the Little Apple should be sending me all the K-State love, merch, whatever, for my dismissal of Kansas State has fueled the Wildcats to an unreal run with Adrian Martinez, who I remember before the season, Matt Green, had K-State in the Big 12 title game against Name Redacted. And look, Kansas State piling it on here now with another big win over Texas Tech. Texas Tech made it close late, but and they're a good team, and they showed a lot in this one. But Adrian Martinez, 7 rushing touchdowns in the last 2 weeks. Can the man be stopped, Matt Green?
No, he cannot, apparently. Him and Deuce Vaughn both went for 170 yards on the ground. Deuce Vaughn also, I don't know if you saw it, one of the nastiest jukes you'll see in this game. I don't know who posted on Twitter, but a pretty sick play he had. But, yeah, Kansas State just forcing a bunch of turnovers. I think that was the difference in this one. I think Texas Tech turned it over 4 times. You're not going to win many football games where you turn the ball over that much. So, yeah, Kansas State, they're the Big 12. It's a lot of fun this year. I think this is a taste of what it's going to be like after Oklahoma and Texas leave, where we're just going to have no idea week in, week out who the best team is in this conference.
Next up, we know this team might be the best team in the conference, and I'm going to maintain this one. Oregon State goes down 41-17 to the Utah Utes. Utah blows out the Beavs in this one. So they get revenge from their, I think, this was their only Pac-12 loss last year, right? For Utah was losing to Oregon State, if I seem to remember.
I think you're right about that.
So Utah, very quiet. They just go about their business. That's all I can really say about Oregon, like Utah, where they're just an efficient machine. Cam Rising stats don't really pop. He ran for like almost, I think he ran for 100 in this one. A little bit through the air. He doesn't really turn the ball over. He's just solid. They know exactly who they are. Utah is just going to do this week over week. The loss of Florida, look, tough road environment, whatever. Things got weird late.
That was too loud. They want to be more quiet.
Yeah.
That was too marquee of a game.
Oregon State suffered its second straight loss, but they still had 21 first downs in this one, 417 yards. Like, Jonathan Smith is still doing the Lord's work over there in Corvallis, and they were down to their third string quarterback at one point in this game with no one going down to injury, the neck thing. But I don't know. Beavs are still a good team, but I think Utah, I cannot wait for the Utah-USC game because I think we can go ahead. And I mean, look, I don't want to piss off USC fans, but my instincts tell me USC's got some trouble ahead with both the Ducks, who are really figuring some stuff out, but mostly the Utah Utes, who I think are head and shoulders the best team in the Pac-12. And that will be fulfilled. The prophecy will be fulfilled in due time. Matt Green, what did you make of this?
For the second straight week, Oregon State with 4 turnovers, and you're not going to win. Was it 4-0 both games too? Yeah. You're not going to win any many games where you got a -4 turnover differential. So yeah, Utah looked impressive. Cam Rising looked a lot better in this game than he has in a couple of the earlier games. So yeah, Utah's offense looked good. Oregon State, not so much.
Absolutely. Next up, Bama versus Arkansas. Bama goes up 28-0. I text you where I was like, what are you doing, Matt Green? Why do you keep talking yourself into fun Bama? Nick Saban has lost to Arkansas, let me check my notes here, exactly 0 times since he has been the head coach at the University of Alabama. People wanted you to believe that Bama could go down to Arkansas here. Arkansas goes in a hole. And you mentioned that the storming comeback for Arkansas in the second half. Why, Matt Green, was there an avenue for a comeback in the second half for the Razorbacks? What, did it happen to be a Bryce Young who exited this affair with a shoulder injury that opened the door for Mr. Milroe to come in and really just not inspire you with 4 of 9, 65 yards and a TD? Alabama had -1 yards in the third quarter. People are going to make something of the Arkansas comeback. Bryce Young and company were absolutely obliterating the Hogs here. And I don't know. Make the case, Matt Green, for why you thought this was a little bit more close or more intriguing than I am letting on here.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting game. Obviously, they jumped up on him 28-0. And if Bryce Young doesn't get hurt, they don't come back in this game. But they were playing very poorly, even by their standards in the first game, like, or in the first half. Like, receivers were just not making plays. KJ Jefferson was missing throws. Like, he was just not playing at the level we've seen him play. And obviously, Alabama has a part of that, of course, playing a great defense. But you finally saw, once some momentum started to go Arkansas's way, like, KJ Jefferson finally started having some success on the ground. The receivers started making some difficult contested catches. Like, that's what that, you have to make some plays. Like, they weren't all easy. Like, some of the drops or plays they didn't make, they might not be errors in a baseball sense, but they're plays you got to make if you're gonna beat Alabama. Shout out to Sam Pittman for the onside kick call. That was a great call. Arkansas,
Execution. Like, that was one incredible. Of the most seamless, easy. They made that look so easy. They deserve a lot of credit. That was the coolest onside kick I've ever seen.
Yeah, without a doubt. So after, let me see here. After Alabama, the turning point of this game was 3rd and 15 with 14 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That's when Arkansas was really had the most momentum they had. It was 28-23 at that point. They're about to get the ball back, and then Milroe broke that 77-yard run, almost scored. And from that point on, they just couldn't stop Alabama again. So before that, so to start this the second half, they had run 12 plays until that point, that 3rd and 15. They had run 12 plays for negative 6 yards in the second half. And after that play, they had 12 plays for 244 yards and 3 touchdowns. They had the one play drive where Gibbs went 75 yards. And then I think, what, did Gibbs go 72 yards on, like, the next one?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just, big play after big play, even in the first half that Kobe Prentice had that 80, like, 70-yard slant that he took to the house. Or it may have only been, like, 50 or 60. But just big play after big play. Like, you just, if you're going to be this 3-3-5 that Arkansas always hypes up and play in like 8 in coverage and everything like that. Like, the whole reason you do that is to prevent big plays. If you're not able to prevent big plays and you're just going to let the other team run all over you, which is basically what Alabama was doing in the first half. Like, I mean, and in the second half, especially in the fourth quarter with Gibbs. Mm-hmm. So yeah, over 300 yards on the ground, like, you're just not going to be able to beat Alabama. You have to make Alabama be one dimensional. And they can win a lot of games being one-dimensional because of such dynamic play from their quarterback. But if they're able to actually gash you on the run, there's no chance in this one. But Arkansas did have this at 5 points in the fourth quarter. I think Tennessee last year was beating their chest for having like a one-score game with Alabama to start the fourth quarter. So even though they ended up losing by like 21 points, right? Or it was like 28, right?
I think it got up to 28. Well, different. It was on the road, for one. Number two, Bryce Young played the entirety of this game.
No, that Bryce Young, and I think that's the biggest story, obviously, from this mm-hmm. game. If he's out for a long period of time, Milroe is clearly a dynamic runner, but if he has to pass the ball, you know, we'll see. They got some difficult games coming up, so we'll see. We'll see how big of an impact. And have you heard anything on Bryce Young? I haven't really heard anything.
I think he's going to play. I don't think it was serious. I think he's going to be fine. So I think he's going to be playing because this is a tough stretch for them. I think they got A&M this weekend. So A&M's desperate, and they did knock him off last year. So you're going to want Bryce Young in that one, especially based on what we saw from Milroe. Maybe we get Ty Simpson, the Tennessee legend, 5-star. Maybe he gets an opportunity if he can't go.
And that's the second Saturday of October next week. Is there a is there a big game the week after that for Alabama?
People are saying, but we'll see.
Saturday of October.
Let's just get through LSU because I'm going to shock some people with my LSU Tennessee pick on Wednesday, based on where I'm leaning right now. I might stun some people. We still got some time. Still got some time, but right now I'm not going to tip my hand a little too much here.
I think you already did, but that's fine.
Oklahoma State, Baylor, Oklahoma State, Spencer Sanders, 4 wins away now from breaking Mason Rudolph's school wins record. This from a very good Oklahoma State blog, Pistols Firing, said, quote, "The Cowboys took a 16-3 lead into halftime, holding the Bears to their lowest first half in Waco since the Cowboys' 2019 win." The Cowboys get it done, man. They take care of the Baylor Bears and get their revenge on the road against the neon lighter colored uniforms for the Bears in this one. What did you make of it?
This is the other uniform flag on the day. All white versus all yellow. Shout out to our colorblind people out there, like my dear mother.
I'm colorblind.
Did you have a problem watching this game? All
no,
white versus all yellow?
It wasn't that bad, no.
I felt like, obviously, I'm not colorblind, so I didn't have a problem with it. Especially their yellow, it seemed like a golder yellow, like not super bright, maybe West Virginia kind of yellow. But yeah, according to my mom, both of these teams looked white, so I felt for on that.
The bigger issue is like when they did the color rush. So like when they did Bills Jets like 5 years ago that Thursday night. Do you remember when they used to do the color rush every Thursday?
Yeah.
For the NFL. Well, they did red green one week and didn't realize that. That one, I legitimately could not tell the difference with numbers and players and things like that. So that is one for colorblind people. And I really am diagnosed colorblind. My grandfather had it and passed down from the grandfather has a daughter. They can pass it. It's a whole thing. But yeah, I'm navy blue, like navy blue and black and purple. All look that. It's very close. It's hard to do socks is what I found is the most difficult part of it is matching socks is a nightmare sometimes.
Well, I feel for you, man.
And a suit. I did a black suit one time, and I thought it was brown, navy blue, and I wore, like, brown shoes with a black suit. And they were like, what are you doing? And I was like, it's blue. And they're like, nope, very black.
That's tough.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, this was a really fun game. Both teams just big plays, turnovers. You had everything in this game. Comebacks, you know, kickoff returns. This was a wild one, but disappointed in my Baylor Bears. I thought they were separating themselves as the best team in the Big 12. Got this big time game. Oklahoma State's a really good team, but you got it at home this year. I felt like this was a win you needed to get. But this is huge for Oklahoma State. Spencer Sanders only threw one interception against Baylor. Bounced back from his two performances last year. I thought he played well in this one. Yeah, I think Oklahoma State, like you said, the power rankings right now, if you will, in the Big 12, they might be right there at the top.
Absolutely. Oklahoma State's a very good team. I think they're the best team in the Big 12 if I had to put my just my pick in the hat there. Wake Forest beats Florida State for back-to-back years now. My takeaway from this one, Matt Green, Florida State's in trouble. Their next two games at NC State, very motivated NC State, and then Clemson back-to-back at home. So the Noles are going to be flirting with 500, methinks, sooner rather than later.
Go ahead.
Well, Michael Pittman looked really good in this one. I like him a lot for the Noles. But Wake Forest, the difference with them this year, the defense is a little bit better. Brad Lambert's doing good work. Wake Forest held the Noles to under 400 total yards and just 112 yards on the ground. Big win for Wake on the road where they just kept this good Florida, improving Florida State team in check. And now this was one the Noles really needed. They really needed this final one before they went into the best two teams in the ACC back to back. But that's where they're at. What did you make of it?
I think you're absolutely right. I think this Wake Forest defense does look improved from what they were a year ago. And I guess it's the millennial, it's the 90s kid in me. I want to believe in Florida State, right? Like, I want to believe Florida State's, that LSU win is looking better and better week by week. Like, LSU may not be as bad as some thought. So, I don't know. I wanted to believe Florida State, and they let me down. Because I feel like Wake Forest was just in control of this game the whole way. Like, they only won by 10, but Florida State just never really threatened. This is a big time win. Go on the road at Doak and get a win. Second straight year for the Demon Deacons. Yeah, that's big time.
Last big one, the Texas A&M Aggies lose in a big one on the road in the True Maroon Bowl, and the Mississippi State Bulldogs prove that they are the true maroon team in the Southeastern Conference. Will Rogers, excellent once again. Texas A&M found themselves in a 14-0 hole at halftime in this one. Obviously, a lot more scoring in the second half. But look, Mississippi State, they're a very, very good football team. It was criminal they were not ranked coming into this week, and they're now ranked. This is an extremely talented football program, and they're good, man. They showed, especially to A&M, you can have a really good defense and also have a fun, electric offense, and A&M just continues not to have that. And I mean, like I think I said in the pod last week, A&M has tipped their cap, or tipped their hand. We know who they are offensively. You cannot change that midseason. You cannot revamp this whole just organizational structure and scheme in the middle of the year. This is who they are. And unfortunately, it's just an 8-4, 9-3 team because they have enough talent and defensive personnel, but they're not that good. They're just fine. And that's not what you're paying Jimbo Fisher that amount of money to be.
Yeah, and I definitely wouldn't say it's a foregone conclusion to just go 8-4 either. Like this, you can't. The SEC West is a bad place to struggle, and I at least felt somewhat of confidence that they figured out the quarterback situation with Max Johnson, and now you're 5 games into a season, and you really don't know who the quarterback is. Like that's just a terrible spot to be in. Like you said, like. The SEC West schedule, like, it's not getting easier. They got Alabama next week, at South Carolina, Ole Miss, Florida, Auburn, LSU. Like, there's a lot of challenges still on that schedule. Like, I don't know if I would count any of those wins as, you know, just automatic wins, any of those conference games the rest of the way. So, we just have no idea what to expect with this offense week in and week out, other than it's probably going to be pretty frustrating to watch. Like, it's just... Yeah, the hot seat Jimbo talk. I think we've talked about it before. I thought he had at least till 2023 when we'd even get to that point. But man, it can get bad enough to where this actually becomes a thing, and it feels like it's starting to become a thing.
We're getting closer, and Paul Feinbaum was reporting, I believe, at some point over the weekend that the vultures are maybe swirling about whether or not they're okaying. What would be, I think, probably the highest buyout ever, right? If you were to move on from Jimbo this offseason, like, or even the middle of the year, it has to be the biggest buyout in college football history if that's where they went. But my thing, what I would do is just go to Jimbo and be like, the offense can no longer be in your hands. Like, you can't control it. You're going to be a CEO and Orgeron type coach, and we are going to go spend the money to bring in our Todd Monken or whoever. Like, you cannot have your hands all over this offense anymore. If you want to keep this job and not just take a bunch of money to go away, that's the deal, is we have to bring in somebody else and they get to run the offense they want to run. Get our Jeff Lebby, whoever it is. But that has to be the conversation, I think.
Yeah, especially you look at Miami and Arkansas, like those could have easily both been losses. Like 24 points is not a lot of points in college football, especially not for a guy who's supposed to be an offensive guru. And this is the most, 24 is the most they've scored in the last 4 weeks. And they're somehow 2-2 in those games and not 0-4. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not good. It's not looking good at all for Jimbo.
Not at all, Matt Green. So that is all I've got from our pick'em. Was there any other games you wanted to hit before we wrap up here on a Sunday night?
No, I think the last one that I feel like was interesting to me was just LSU-Auburn. I felt like Auburn in the first half, it looked like they were kind of, you know, turning a corner with their passing game. But the offense, after going up 17-0, didn't score another point the entire rest of the game. So I don't even know what's happening at Auburn.
Connor Ogara had this on Twitter about that. In Auburn's last 8 second halves against Power 5 competition, it has been outscored 104-21.
Wow. But if the transitive property has taught us anything about college football, next week's matchup between Georgia and Auburn is going to be a good one. They both beat Missouri by 3. Georgia beat Missouri by 4. So who knows? Sanford Stadium, Georgia-Auburn could be more competitive than we were hoping a few weeks ago. Georgia fans were hoping a few weeks ago, I should say.
Entirely possible. For that guy down there in Decatur, Georgia, Matt Green, find him on Twitter, college football expert Matt Green on Twitter at @Matt_Dib_Green. Follow myself at @Chase_Thomas. And as always, hit that like button. If you're watching on YouTube, youtube.com/ChaseThomasPodcast, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. We are there, as are all of our shows here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Matt Green, I will talk to you in a couple days.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.